Okay. I really feel obliged and responsible to, at the beginning of the show, remember Edward Said, a professor of University of Columbia and an intellectual who taught many of us immigrants in this country a new way of looking at the West and also expecting to be treated differently. I'm reading just a little passage from a piece written by Hamid Dabashi, who is the chair of Middle East and Asian Languages and Culture at University of Columbia. He wrote about Edward Said, and he says, "Today, of the myriad of things I have learned from Edward Said, nothing matters to me more than the rhapsodic eloquence of his voice, the majesty, confidence, courage, audacity, and poise of his diction, without which my generation of immigrant intellectuals would have been at the mercy of mercenary academics and embedded journalists who have now flooded the gutters of the mass media, uttering their pathology with thick Arabic, Persian, or South Asian accents, and yet speaking with a nauseating we that sides with the bankrupt architects of this predatory empire. At Edward Said's voice, in his princely posture and magisterial air of confidence, the fragile tone of our almost silent objections and the frailty of our say in the matter suddenly rose to the occasion. As the color of our skin began to confuse the color line drawn tyrannically between blacks and whites in the United States, segregated in the respective corners of their misplaced confidence about their races, we Asian and Latinos, Arabs, Turks, Africans, Iranians, Armenians, Kurds, Afghans, and South Asians were instantly brought together beyond the uncommon denominator of our origin and towards the solidarity of our emerging purpose, the nobility of our handshake with Edward Said." He was a great man and a tremendous intellectual of 21st century, and his memory will be alive all the time. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to talk tonight with another significant personality of the Middle East, Professor Nawal Sadawi. She's a novelist, psychiatrist, and a writer who's well-known both in the Arab countries and in many other parts of the world. The list of her written books and essays and papers actually took about 5 pages after I printed her CV. She has been a visiting professor at Duke University, University of Washington, University of Illinois, Florida Atlantic University, Montclair, University of Southern Maine, where she's now a visiting professor. I met Dr. Sadawi around 1994 in Seattle for International Women's Day. There was a special program. Dr. Sadawi, as I said, he's written a lot of book and novels. Her books and novels on the situation of women have had a deep effect on successive generations of young women over the last 3 decades. As a result of her literary and scientific writings, she has had to face numerous difficulties and even dangers in her life. In 1972, she lost her job, which was a high ministerial position in, I think, the Ministry of Health in Egypt. The magazine Health, which she had founded and edited for more than 3 years, was closed. In 1981, President Sadat put her in prison, and she was released after President Sadat's assassination. And from 1988 to 93, her name figured on death lists issued by some fanatical terrorist organization that were active in Egypt and the rest of the Middle East. I know that a couple of years ago there was a decree by a court that called her an apostate and against her to divorce her from her husband, Dr. Sadawi, who is her lifelong partner, I believe. It is a great pleasure to have Dr. Sadawi here with me tonight, and I want to welcome Naval. Hello?
Hello.
Welcome, Dr. Sadawi.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Let me start with you and what was your impression from Professor Said when she wrote The Orientalism and the way West looks at East, and especially in your case, the way they look at women in the Middle East and women issues?
Well, I met Edward Said several times in different conferences in the United States, in London, and other places. I remember the last time I met him in London, he told me that he is more feminist than me. So I think he was with Women Liberation. He was a feminist man. And he was also progressive on many issues, especially the Palestinian issue. He was an artist, also a creative critic. He was many things, and I think we lost by his death an intellectual and a supporter of people who were oppressed all over the world, not only in our region. I don't call it the Middle East, because usually I say middle to whom.
Correct. That's basically the core of Orientalism that he wrote, of even naming the region Middle East shows that it is the center of the world was supposed to be the West,
yeah.
And so that's the middle of East compared to Europe. But my question was to think about how women in the region, in Arab, in Islamic region, in the Middle East, let's use that term for now, are perceived in the West, and what is your take on that issue and the way they're being perceived and their struggle? What is your opinion about how it's being perceived in the West and especially by West feminism?
I'm living in the United States almost the last 10 years between Egypt and the United States, so I know the American society very well. I compare the Egyptian society and the Arab countries with other Europe, the United States, etc. So my conclusion is that women are oppressed in all countries, including the United States. But of course, for political reasons, and because of this struggle and fighting between the West and the East, and especially now, you know, with the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, neocolonialism is now very visible. Because of that, they usually try to say that women in Islamic countries or women in, because of Islam, they are oppressed. They are veiled because of Islam. They are inferior because they live in the Arab region or they belong to Islamic culture. Of course, some of them are ignorant of Islam, and some of they know about, but they are politically oriented to show us in this very backward image. But if we compare Islam to Christianity, to Judaism, we find that there are minor differences between the three monotheistic religions. And I did that study, and women are inferior in the three religions. Even they are more inferior in Judaism and in Christianity relative. In Islam, in fact, in the Quran, women are better off than in the Bible. This is from the scientific and the objective point of view. In Egypt, I became a doctor, and there are many, if we make a statistic about the number of women doctors in Egypt or women professors in Egypt, the percentage is much higher than the U.S. and Canada. There are a lot of biases in relation to the image of women in Islamic countries or the image of Arab women in the West. And it's all political.
Put a point on the exact, I guess, location. It is political and how it's being used as a tool, the human rights, especially in the case of Afghanistan. We do remember that at many times it was being ignored, but then when it was politically safe, then it was being used, and now it's the same for the rest. But for our listeners who do not have much of information about inside of the region and women movements, can you tell us what is happening there as far as women's struggle and the NGOs? And I know you were involved and the chair of an organization, Arab Women Solidarity Movement, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak of the activities that are happening by women in the Middle East and how that can be supported?
There is, of course, a backlash against women activities and women liberation movements all over the world. Backlash. There is a backlash against the poor, against the blacks. We are going backwards. There is a lot of militarism, the increasing neocolonial capitalist exploitation to poor countries in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America. Because class and patriarchy go hand in hand. Whenever you have more increased class oppression, the gap between men and women increases. So the women movement in Egypt, the Arab Women Solidarity Association, or other NGOs and women organizations, they are less active than 10 years ago. Most of the movements in our countries are more or less governmental or semi-governmental. It's very difficult to be independent. Because when you are independent, then you have a different opinion from the government, then you may be closed down. Now, if I you mentioned Afghanistan. You know, when the U.S. Army went to Afghanistan, they said, we are going to liberate women. I just 2 days ago, I received a message from RAWA, the Afghan Women Liberation Movement, and they said that their situation is worse than before the American occupation. Of course, the Taliban regime was terrible, reactionary. And who really encouraged the Taliban regime? It was the United States. Who created Bin Laden and the so-called fanatic religious groups all over the world? They were created by the capitalist neocolonial powers, especially in the United States. So we are not deceived, in fact, by the idea that, what's happening in the world now, that the U.S. is going to liberate Iraq, they invade Iraqi people and kill them to liberate them. This is a big lie. The same happened in Afghanistan. And we see what's happening to the Palestinian people.
And I guess, to be fair, you probably have more insight than I do. The situation of women in Iraq was one of the examples for, I guess, in the Middle East. It was a secular system, and women had lots of rights, and they took many positions in the government. Is that not correct?
Mm-hmm. Of course. Of course, we can differ with Saddam Hussein very much. I disagreed with many of what he did, but we have to be honest and say that he was secular and the country was secular under him. Now what's happening under American occupation, that they are creating religious strife between and divide and rule. They are dividing the country between the Shia, the Sunni. They are creating chaos and mess and all that, and women are not liberated. Because we cannot imagine people to be liberated under foreign occupation. This never happened in history. Foreign occupation is foreign occupation, and you cannot liberate people under foreign occupation. And but many people are deceived because of the media, because of the lies. you know. When I listen to George Bush speeches, it reminds me of Sadat and other presidents in our region. It's full of lies.
Yeah.
And the whole war in Iraq was built on lies. They didn't find mass destruction weapons. They went there for the oil and for political control of the whole region. So it's very, very difficult to separate women issues from political and economic issues, whether locally or globally. They are one, and we cannot separate them.
I wanted to ask you the question, is there any movement right now in like the rest of the region? For example, I know that in Iran there is a very, very active movement going on. And in fact, I have news that one of the Iranian women human rights lawyer is now a candidate for a Peace Nobel Prize, which will be announced around midnight tonight. And she is running on top with Pop and Václav Havel, Dr. Shirin Ebadi. She's a lawyer and a human rights lawyer in Iran. And she's one of the nominees for a Peace Laureate.
Well, first of all, I'm not deceived by the so-called Peace Nobel Prize. They gave it to Begin and Sadat, and I don't know who. You know, it's there is a question mark about that.
Jimmy Carter.
So I am, you know, I have to speak my own opinion, and even the Nobel Prize of Literature or Peace, it's political, mainly political, and is dominated by Western powers. It's their objectives. They give these prizes to the people really who fit within this agenda, but not to dissident writers, not to people who are really fighting for peace or are dying for peace. And what do we mean by peace? What's the meaning of peace? I would like to know, because Sharon is considered a man for peace. Sharon is a very peaceful man. And he's killing the Palestinians, you know. And the Palestinian people who are fighting the tanks with naked bodies, and they are deprived of everything, their homes demolished, their parents killed in front of them, etc. And they are, even when they bomb themselves and they explode themselves and die, they call them terrorists. But they don't call the military power of the U.S. a terrorist power, or the Israeli army a terrorist army. State terrorism is now going on and killing people in Palestine, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, under the so-called democracy or women liberation or human rights. And the children who are dying in desperation and because of the grievances, they call them terrorists. So that's about Peace Prize, about the Peace Prize. So I don't know.
She is nominated. That doesn't mean that she will get it. And the nomination is done by many people who are not necessarily related or have any connection with governments. But you're right, the committee that selects is usually biased or somehow influenced. So. And we have had in the past that has political, influence in it. But I know for a fact that Dr. Shirin Ebadi, she's a very fabulous human rights activist, and she lives in Iran, basically. And she was imprisoned around, 2 years ago for taking a case of another colleagues of her. Who is now in actually U.S., Merengi's car. So let's go back to the issue of democracy in the Middle East. And one of my questions that I actually emailed you was, these days are talks about implementing democracy and the Iraqi model, and there was this expectation that the neoconservatives were suggesting that after the Iraqi model, it will spread all over the region. What is your opinion on that, and whether you believe in democracy can be implemented from outside with military force?
Of course not. And this is a big lie, too, a big lie. I do not think that the American army occupying Iraq for the oil and the multinationals of oil, that this, it will bring democracy to Iraq. Of course, there was no democracy under Saddam Hussein either. There is no democracy in the United States. I am living here in the United States, and you know the civil rights are being eroded by the Bush administration under the so-called Security Patriot Act 1 and the coming 2 and all that under security. Even the American people are deprived of their civil rights. And Arabs and Muslims can be arrested here in the United States without being really criminals. They can be arrested and you don't know what's happening to them, or deported or tortured. So, and also, what's democracy? Do you think that George Bush was really elected democratically in the United States? No. The election in the United States is based on money. If you are not a millionaire, if you don't have $200 million to run to pay for the election campaign, how are you going to be elected? So it's based on money and the media. The people who own the media, who own the money. So how can you be a president in the United States if you are poor and you cannot afford that? So usually they say that there is no democracy in the Arab countries. Of course, there are no democracies in our countries. We don't have democracies. We have dictators. But who supports those dictators in our region? It is the United States. Who supported Sadat when he put us in prison? It was the United States. You know, so we shouldn't separate between dictators in our region and global dictators, and especially dictators in the U.S. So democracy is a question mark, a big question mark. What do we mean by democracy? If the increasing gap between the poor and the rich in the United States and in Egypt and in many countries, because of the World Bank policies, because of the IMF, etc. When people die of hunger or become sick of hunger, do you call this democracy? Because democracy means that people should have equal chances, that they should live well, that they should have jobs. When you have unemployment in the U.S., increasing unemployment in the U.S. or any country, can you say this is a democratic country? When the young people cannot find jobs? So these are questions, because democracy to me means that the people govern themselves, that there is equality between people regardless of gender or class or color or creed or any or religion or anything. There is an increasing Christian fundamentalism in the United States under George Bush administration. So can you call this democracy when there is Christian fundamentalism increasing? So there is a big question mark. And democracy cannot come from outside. Democracy is a struggle that men and women inside the country work for it and die for it. It's a long struggle, and it cannot come from outside.
From what I hear... first of all, let me tell the listeners who have just joined us that I am talking to Dr. Naval Sadavi, a novelist and a doctor and a feminist from Egypt. She's a visiting professor at the University of Maine and a writer of many books, of which I just want to introduce a couple. There's Love in the Kingdom of Oil, a novel published by Al-Saki, London, 2001. Walking Through through Fire, Zed Books, London, 2002. The Well of Life, two novels, London. The Innocence of Devil, the hidden face of Eve, which I know has been even translated into Persian and was even banned in Iran. God dies by the Nile. These are all translated to English, but I don't know if they are available now. Memoirs of a Woman, Two Women in One, a novel by Al-Saki, printed in London, 1992. Memoirs from the Women's Prison, that's a very famous one, 1985, Women's Press, and also University of California Press, USA, 1995. And many, many other books that have been translated to different, to many languages. And we are talking about the democracy and the situation of women in the Middle East. Let me ask you this question. With whatever definition that we have about a democratic system, do you think there would be a difference as far as the human rights and universality of human rights and cultural relativism? What is your opinion on that?
I am against what they call cultural relativism. I think there must be... we are going towards universal human rights, universal women rights, and universal religion also. I am very much to undo the divisions between people, to create what we call international citizen, human beings. We are human beings, and we should really fight against any power or any anything that divide us by religion or by color or nationality or even gender. Because in our association, when we started the Arab Women Solidarity Association, we have 30% men with us. So we were not against men. We said that if a man is against patriarchy and against class, then he is fighting with us. Because we are fighting against patriarchal oppression and against class oppression. So we had 30% men with us. So I think, and that's exactly what's happening now. I went to Porto Alegre 2 times for the World Social Forum, and I walked in demonstrations with hundreds of thousands of people from all over the world, and we felt we are one. We are human beings. We didn't ask what's your nationality or what's your religion or what's your profession or what's your age. Because we felt we are one, we belong to humanity, and that's the future. We have to fight for that. But those people who speak about cultural relativism, I'll give you an example. There was a very famous feminist, British feminist, Germaine Greer, who wrote in The Guardian one day. She said, "You know, if women are circumcised in Egypt or Sudan, that's their culture. It's cultural relativism. I should not interfere." I disagree totally. I am against female and male circumcision in any culture. As a medical doctor, I'm speaking now because I know the damage and the danger of male and female circumcision. So I am against it because it's a very bad habit. We inherited this from slavery. So how can we allow it under the so-called cultural relativism?
There are some, activities in the Middle East. Again, I'm using the term.
Which I don't like.
But I don't know what else to call.
North Africa, West Asia. Uh-huh. It's like, you know, when I go to I was going to London, then I told them I'm going to the Middle West. And when I come to America, I tell them I'm coming to the Far West. And they laugh. They laugh. Why? This is, in fact, against human rights that people name us, give us names according to them. Not. So we have to fight against the word Middle East. And usually I say Middle to whom? we are named middle to whom?
Correct.
So we can say North Africa, we can say Asia, we can say Latin America, something like that.
Okay, but my point was that in some part of that region, for example, in Iran, there is a movement, or there was a movement that they were trying to adapt some of, say, Quranic courses and try to basically justify by religious attitude the rights of women and defend that. And they have been kind of successful in doing that. There are women in Iran in, for example, Majlis, the Congress, and they even challenged the term that's being used in their Islamic constitution, for example, to define that, they, let's say, a president must be a rajul. And they define the rajul not just as a man, but also as a person who has the personality of being a manager and so on and so forth. What is your opinion on that kind of approach?
Well, I think this is happening all over the world. Under Islam, under Christianity, under other religions, women and men are trying to reinterpret religion to fit within the life we are living, because our life is changing all the time. And religion is fixed, so you cannot really deal with a fixed jacket while life is changing. So religion is changing, but I am very much against a religious state and also religious dialogue. I am against that. And we have to go beyond that, because religion, people are killed under the name of religion. People are killed under the name of God. And we have to know how religion is used and abused in politics. And in fact, religion is a political ideology itself. I studied the Quran and the Bible, and I made a study, a comparative study between the three holy books. They are political books. And I can give you examples. They are political books that deal with war and with economics, with sexuality, with life, and everything. So they are political books, social books, economic books, military books. So, and we have to be clear about that. Because what's happening, that the right wing is and the people who are pro-capitalism and pro-militarism are all religious, very religious. And also the universal fundamentalist movement all over the world, whether Christian, Islamic, Jewish, they are doing a lot of harm to people under religion. And I am I question what's happening in Iran. Of course, it's better than under Khomeini, but still using the religious language. It means that they are dividing people by religion. To me, religion is a very private matter. So everybody is free to choose his or her God. But politics and the state and the laws should be secular so that we can criticize them, so that rights to be clear. Religion is very ambiguous. You need interpretation of the word of God. And those people who come and interpret are the people who have power. Who is doing the interpretation in Iran? What power do they have? And there are many, many interpretations of the one verse. Each verse in the Quran or the Bible has hundreds of interpretations, different interpretation. So whom we should obey? It's very ambiguous, very tricky, very dangerous also.
I take that you believe, obviously, in a secular system, but to build that secular democracy, what is your opinion on how to build a civil society that would support that?
Well, I came from the village, you know. My village in Egypt are more secular than the city of Cairo. And people, when you go away from the capital, people are less religious. Many people think that the ordinary people are religious. It's a, no. Religion is imposed by people in power. And people who have no power, peasants, you know, the peasants or the people who are poor, you know, they think about their bread and their work, and they worry about their work, about their, the health of their children, the diseases. They are very practical. And they don't think about religion except when they eat. After they eat, they think about God. But if they are hungry, if I am hungry and I don't have food, and I am sick and I don't have a shelter, I have to fight to find a house, to have food. And then when I relax, then I think about religion, you know. So ordinary people are much less religious than people in power. People in power in the capital, they need religion.